Around the mulberry bush, roses, roses all fall down. London Bridge, mulberry bush. What am I doing, John? I'm talking about nursery rhymes?
Well, it's not uncommon. In fact, I do feel the need to say rub-a-dub-dub, three men in a tub suddenly.
Yes, well, it happens. Or Humpty Dumpty or whatever. You know why? Because nursery rhymes are so instilled in part of who we are, because when we were little babies and through school, that's how we interact with kids and parents and adults. And it's like a whole big tradition for hundreds of years, at least in the English-speaking countries. And I'm sure the other countries have their own versions.
Yeah, I think instilled is the right idea. In fact, I think they're so instilled and ingrained in us that we repeat them without actually thinking too hard about what's actually being said and what's actually going on. Because if you take a closer look at these incredibly popular nursery rhymes, which you and I have now done, they're mostly dark and creepy. And when you understand what they're all about, you're like, why would we possibly repeat this stuff to children over and over again? Which I guess is what repeat means.
Yeah, I think that's crazy. And I think that's a wonderful setup to today's episode. So welcome, everyone, to another episode of Smart Drivel. That was John Ellenthal. I'm Kurt Schneider. And today we're going to talk about the origins, the dark, the lascivious origins, or just random, of nursery rhymes that we had no idea when we would just say them off the top of our head with having no clue what was about.
Yeah, we're going to get seriously creepy. So, Kurt, get your creep on and kick us off.
Well, you mentioned it. Three men in a tub, rub-a-dub-dub. I'm going to start right there. Now, the rhyme is something like this that we know. Rub-a-dub-dub, three men in a tub. And who do you think they be? The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, and all of them out to sea. Isn't that sweet and nice?
If you're into public bathing.
Except it's not true, John.
Yeah, it's not true, Kurt, huh?
It is a Victorian whitewash of a poem that dates back to the 14th century.
A whitewash?
Yes. They tried to make it seem like it was very non-lascivious when actually, dating back to the 14th century, it was quite lascivious and actually it was calling out these three people. The original lyrics went like this, John. Hey, rub-a-dub-dub, three maids in a tub. And who do you think were there? The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, and all of them gone to the fair. Right. Why is that important? Because in the 14th century, these wandering minstrel shows, these traveling fairs, had an X-rated peep show component. Did you know this, John?
I did not, but it certainly seems like the perfect basis for a children's nursery rhyme, that's for sure.
You would have three women naked in a tub, and men would pay as a peep show to go watch these naked women in a tub. And so this was actually, the original poem was calling out these guys, calling out the baker, the candlestick maker, and the butcher, who were upstanding men because of their professions, right, in town. But they were going off and being very, you know, creepy and peepy.
So normally regular upstanding members of local society doing things that would generally be frowned upon if they knew what was going on. So I get your whitewash now.
Interesting. And they waited until Victorian era. So, you know, for hundreds of years, it was one way. Then all of a sudden, whoop, let's make it three men in a tub. Ha, ha, ha. Out to sea. Originally calling people out for being pervs.
It is mind boggling. I mean, because as we share, you know, a number of these, most of them have a really dark, not, again, none of this really makes sense to be whispering into the ears of babes to teach them life lessons and make them feel peaceful.
So let's roll right into another one and let's shock some people's worlds think, what? This was so innocent, but it's not.
Yeah, so everyone will know this one, but I'll give you the backstory, but just listen to the words. Why are these words even okay? These are not nice words, especially when you're talking to a young person. So, rock-a-bye baby on the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. Okay. When the bough breaks, the cradle will fall and down will come baby, cradle and all. So here's a story about a baby falling out of its cradle that was in a tree.
That's so sweet. That's what I'd like to listen to as I wake up in the morning or go to bed, especially as a baby. Oh, that's great. I could die.
I think part of the lesson here is you slap a pretty melody on something and everyone's like, oh, that's really beautiful and lovely. And it's like listening to a song. The song sounds great. I love that song. And then you find out it's about misogyny or something terrible like that. And so anyway, I think the melody goes a long way. So what is happening with Rockabye Baby? So there's, as usual, since no one really knows the answer, there are a couple of theories that have gained popularity over the years. And one of which is the notion that the lyrics refall to an heir to the throne. So this baby is actually an heir to the throne. And since the baby doesn't end up doing very well in this story, it is about the hope that this heir will not ultimately rise to the throne and continue the reign of his father. So,
because they thought that the father was no good, and so they didn't want the same genes?
Right. So King James II was they think it relates to King James II, who a lot of people really wanted to be overthrown. And they were concerned that if his heir survived, it would be easier for the transfer of power. And, you know, King James II and his policies would continue. So they were hoping bad things were going to happen to the heir to King James II. Said another way, they were hoping the heir would die. Now, a baby dying, again, not a great story to be telling a baby or a young person.
John, that is fascinating. Something that we think, a nice rockabye baby. It was actually about King James II. And in doing research for this episode, I actually did read something about that. And one interpretation they said was that King James II, who I believe was very Catholic, and that's why everyone did not like him, right? Mm. There was that tension.
Right.
He apparently was sterile, could not have a kid. And yet he needed to keep the line going, this Catholic line. And so the story was that they believed someone took a different child from one of his courtiers or whatever that was Roman Catholic and made that the heir. And so that could be why they were hoping that the heir would fall down and therefore right. The Roman Catholic line would be broken.
So what we don't know for sure is the exact meaning of this. We've given you a couple of the more popular theories. What we can tell you for sure is that the words basically say there was a baby in a cradle on top of a tree. It got windy, the cradle fell, and the baby fell out and hit the ground. So isn't that a lovely little nursery rhyme?
So
young
sweet.
Child, sleep well.
So sweet. By the way, you said something earlier that I just want to comment on. You're right. It's because of whether it's the rhyme or the song or whatever, but it reminds me of, you know, that song we've talked about this with Jonathan Edwards, Sunshine?
On My Shoulders?
No, that's John Denver. Jonathan Edwards, Sunshine, go away
yes,
today.
Okay.
Don't feel much like. Every time it comes on, you start singing, you love it. The words are actually about how terrible his father is. Get the hell out of my life. I want nothing to do with you. I hate you. But we sing it like it's just everything's wonderful.
Well, it has a very upbeat kind of vibe going on. So why did he? It sounds like he confused us on purpose.
Maybe, but I bet you we could find a ton of songs that do that exact same thing just because they're sweet melody to your
point. I think the sound may be more important than the words.
I once heard that men listen to the tune and women listen to the words of songs.
Well, we are men, so our theory is going to hold in this particular episode. All right. Destroy another wonderful childhood memory for me, Kurt.
Okay. This one's interesting. Humpty Dumpty.
Oh, perhaps the granddaddy of them all.
Yes. So we know the line, right? Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. We love this. And we all think Humpty Dumpty's an egg, right? And that's because of Lewis Carroll in Through the Looking Glass.
Right.
He was depicted as an egg. Actually, Humpty Dumpty obviously was not an egg, was not a person. Do you know what Humpty Dumpty was, John? I had no idea.
Well, if you have no idea, there's a pretty good chance I have no idea.
A huge cannon, a siege cannon.
Oh, good.
With name Humpty Dumpty. And here's what it was. It was a huge siege cannon used by the royalist forces, a.k.a. the king's men,
right,
during the English Civil War in 1642 to 1651. Well, in 1648, during the siege of Colchester, the royalists, those to the king,
right,
called Humpty Dumpty to the top of the church tower of St. Mary at Walls. And for 11 weeks, the cannon blasted away at the roundheads, which were the parliament people who were not of the king. And these troops, they kept going at the troops, boom, boom, boom. Eventually, the roundheads blew up the church tower and Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. And it burst into tons of pieces. So guess what happened? All the king's men couldn't put it together again. I had no idea. Pretty cool.
All right. So now you've added a whole other dimension to how we take meaning from these things. We talked about the melody, but Lewis Carroll comes along and draws a picture of Humpty Dumpty, and that becomes the defining image, which ain't nothing like the original Humpty Dumpty intention. And that becomes what we think. We think he's a big egg. And it sounds pretty sad because it sounds like the egg died and couldn't be saved.
Right.
So here's the story. This big guy fell, broke into a lot of pieces, and he couldn't be put back together again. He's dead. Good night, sweetheart. But the truth is, it sounds like it's a good thing that Humpty Dumpty had a great fall.
It wasn't an egg. It was a legion of death. Right. A huge cannon, a war implement.
So it's just crazy. So we're developing a point of view about how this stuff actually becomes. But again, it's crazy. The words of all of these things are borderline horrific and completely inappropriate for a child about to go to sleep, if indeed this is bedtime. All right. So I got to think Humpty Dumpty is in the pantheon of nursery rhymes. And right beside it is Jack and Jill.
Oh, yeah. Went up a hill.
Yeah. Each with a bucket of water. So To fetch a pail of water. So let's see if we can do this from memory. Jack and Jill went up a hill to fetch a pail of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Jill came tumbling after.
That's so sweet.
Very sweet. So Jack's dead, and Jill's not doing so well either.
No. What happened to the water?
You know, there's another version of this, which is what I tend to remember first, unfortunately, and it's the Andrew Dice Clay version, which is, I'll try to do it with the Dice Man accent, although I'll fail. Jack and Jill went up a hill, each with a buck and a quarter. Jill came down with 250. Hey! I don't want to speculate as to how Jill got all of Jack's money, but you're welcome to.
Yeah, I get it now. What was it about, this Jack and Jill?
Well, a lot of people think Jack and Jill are brother and sister, but it's more common to believe that they are lovers and that Jill is pregnant and Jack falls and dies. And Jill is so distraught that she dies after giving birth to their son. So we'd have to read more about Jack and Jill, but there are a lot of people who believe this is a pregnant couple who were not supposed to be getting pregnant, doing things that get people pregnant. Jack fell, bit the big one a little bit. Not really Romeo and Juliet, other than the fact that they both end up, both their young lovers and end up dead. But there actually is a theory that is anchored a little bit more in history. And there's a place in Kilmersdon, Somerset, which I'm going to think sounds very English.
Certainly
sounds does. Very English countryside. There's a place, a hill that's actually dubbed Jack and Jill Hill. And by the way, we should talk about how we love rhymes, things that rhymes, which is a big part of nursery rhymes, both in the name and in the construction.
Yes, for sure.
So according to this story from Kim Kilmersdown, so they were a couple expecting a baby and Jack popped out to get some water, had an accident on the hill and died. So Jill is heartbroken so severely that she basically dies after giving birth, which is the same story I told you a moment ago. But the son, their child, who was an orphan, was raised by the village of Kilmersdon, and they created a plaque dedicated to Jack and Jill, believe it or not, in 2020. And so there is a belief that Jack and Jill were real people. The hill was a real place, and their child, their orphan, was raised by the town of Kilmersdown, where the hill is. So it may be historic. but it's not funny.
Not to be cynical, John, I bet you the, what's the name of the town? Somerset?
Well, it's Kilmersdon.
Okay, well, Kilmersdon's Chamber of Commerce basically said, we want some tourists. Let's claim this hill as a place where Jack and Jill came. And by the way, as a tourist, what are you doing? You're looking at a hill? Oh, did he fall here? And were they going on up the hill to have their tryst? Is that why they were going up the hill?
I don't know if that is spoken to. We know that Jack went to get some water, but it did say that they went up the hill. I believe that she was pregnant at the time. Jack dies on the hill. She dies of heartbreak soon thereafter. Again, regardless of what it actually means or what the... this is not a happy story. Even if you take the words on their face, Jack fell down and broke his crown. He basically hit his head and died. So isn't that pretty?
Yeah, no. And I'm actually stuck on fetch a pail of water is a euphemism for, you know, having sex.
Well, if that's the case, I had never heard that, then that further leads to the belief that they were going there to do things that could lead to a pregnancy.
Well, let me go to something that's not as morbid and not as dark, but something that actually showcases someone who has A, could be Machiavellian, or B, could just be very capitalistic and ambitious. I'm talking, of course, about little Jack Horner, John.
Oh, is he the one that sat in the corner?
Little Jack Horner sat in the corner eating his Christmas pie. He stuck in his thumb and pulled out a plum and said, what a good boy am I? What a good boy am I? Here's the story.
Jack is probably not a good boy, huh?
No, Jack is. Jack is just smart and ambitious. So during the reign of Henry VIII, he was...
Is he the one who always ate the big turkey leg?
Yeah. He, you remember, wanted to get divorced and the Catholic Church would not allow him.
Anne Boleyn.
So that was his second wife, yes, of six. By the way, great Broadway show, Six. It's a retelling of the six wives of Henry VIII.
Does this tie into Sir Thomas More? And he said it wasn't okay and he became a man for all seasons and a saint?
Correct.
Okay, good.
Ghost head chopped off. Good. That was a good movie we watched as kids. So Henry VIII.
Man for all seasons.
Yes. Henry VIII breaks with the Pope, creates the Anglican Church so he can marry Anne Boleyn. Anyway, as part of this, he's like, well, as long as I've broken with the Catholic Church, I'm going to rob and pilfer from all these monasteries and Catholic, you know, cathedrals that have a ton of money and relics and crosses of gold because they've been tithing people forever. So he goes on this, sends this group out, Cromwell, sends Cromwell out, and they start taking...
Nathan Cromwell.
No. Starts taking...
Nolan Cromwell.
No. What's that? He was a quarterback for the Rams in the 70s. Number 41, too. He didn't even have a quarterback number. Anyway, they go and they start taking from all the churches. So if you're an abbot in a church, you want to protect yourself. You want to get in favor for the king. I'm bringing this back to little Jack Horner, John. So this actual's name was Thomas Horner, and he was a steward of the abbot of Glastonbury. And the abbot's like, I want you to go to London and take this pie. But inside the pie, he put deeds to 12 beautiful manors in Glastonbury. Again, he wanted to, no pun intended, because it was probably a curry pie, curry the favor of Henry VIII. So he puts 12 deeds within the pie and says, go take this to Henry VIII. On the way there, little Jack Horner, or Thomas Horner, sticks his thumb in, pulls out the deed to Mel's Manor.
Remember Mel's Diner in Alice's restaurant?
Yes, but this is Mel's Manor, where he kept it, delivered the pie with 11 deeds to manors, went back, said to the guys at Mel's Manor, this is mine, moved his family in for centuries.
It's a good move. So this is a lesson that all children need to learn about stealing while they're on the job for their personal benefit and that of their ancestors or their heirs.
And you live happily ever after, obviously.
At least no one died this time, at least in the words.
Maybe someone from the manor did. Yeah. But anyway, there you go.
All right. So we're never going to, I don't think we actually recite these nursery rhymes that much anymore in our regular lives. But if we did, that we've sufficiently ruined them for us and for many of our listeners. What about our grandchildren? What are we going to do about grandchildren one day?
That's what I was going to say. People with young kids, I'm sure, still do all these. people were pretty clever back then trying to be an allegory of what's going on because they didn't want to get in trouble, but they wanted to hide all these meanings.
Well, it also suggests that things are not always as they seem and there's a deeper meaning in things. So that's what Smart Dribble is all about, taking a look at the many layers, the many serious layers behind very serious things like kids' nursery rhymes. So you'll remember this one, Kurt. This is my last one. So maybe I'll do this, you'll do another one, and we'll call it an episode.
Fine.
So London Bridge is falling down. Do you know that one?
Yes.
Why don't you give it to us?
No, go.
London Bridge is falling down, and there's something about My Fair Lady. And there are a lot of kids that sing this in the, you know, in the playground, and then they all fall down, right? So it may not be lost on you that this is a story about a bridge falling down. So not a happy kind of thing, but it's pretty creepy about a bridge crumbling. But there are many people that say it actually comes from a real life Viking attack.
Yes.
You know, all the way back, like, you know, in the early second millennium. So like the 1000s. I don't know what you call the 1000s.
Dark Ages.
The Dark Ages, that's a better name for it and easier to say as well. So there was this attack, I think, in 1014 by the Vikings. The Viking leader was Olaf Haraldsson, and he is allegedly thought to have pulled the bridge down during his invasion of the British Isles. Again, the basis for a nursery rhyme? Probably not so much. But the best postscript to this whole thing is that the bridge didn't fall down. So the bridge actually survived for hundreds of years. It survived for 600 years and actually never fell down. It was demolished back in the early 1800s, only because they found a better bridge that didn't need as much, you know, maintenance. So here's the problem. Bridge is falling down, not good fodder for a nursery rhyme. Here's the second problem. It didn't fall down. It's a lie.
And here's the third problem. It's celebrating the Vikings raping and pillaging and marauding. And that's supposed to be a sweet nursery rhyme?
Well, maybe that should be the first problem, now that you say it that way.
Yeah. It's celebrating the Vikings coming in and just destroying and torching your town. The interesting thing about London Bridge is when you go to London and you look, you say, oh my God, London Bridge. That's not London Bridge, of course, over the Thames that we think it is. That's the Tower Bridge. The original London Bridge, after they redid it, is in Arizona.
That's right. That's right. Someone bought it and moved it to Arizona.
Yeah.
That is another ugly postscript to this story.
So I'm going to give you one last one. And by the way, we're not even talking about the one that everyone knows, because when you talk about this category, everyone says, ashes, ring around the rosy, which apparently is about the great bubonic plague. So we're not even going to talk about that. But here's one. We talk about people trying to criticize the crown, but doing it in a way they don't get caught. There is a poem that goes like this. Georgie Porgy pudding pie kissed the girls and made them cry. When the boys came out to play, Georgie Porgy ran away. And it's just, again, rhyming scheme, Georgie Porgy, this and that. Well, this was about King George IV, who lived 1762 to 1830. And he was the son, the eldest son of the mad King George III, who was not only crazy, but was in charge during the American Revolution, or as they call it, the war with the colonies. So
that's a good point. They probably don't call it the American Revolution in Britain.
No, just like if you go to Vietnam, they call it the American War, not the Vietnam War.
That makes good sense. Anyway,
he was a dandy, but he was also quite a glutton. In fact, he was really fat. He had a 50-inch waist, hence the Georgie Porgy pudding pie.
Gotcha.
Okay. Then here's what happened. He fell in love, and this whole thing's to make fun of him. He fell in love with a commoner. But not only was she a commoner, John, but she was a Catholic. So he could not marry her. That made her very sad. She cried. He hated his wife, who he had to marry. And when he finally got coronated, even though he'd been married for 22 years or 24 years, he did not invite her to the coronation. That made her cry. So that was kissed the girls and made them cry. Now, also trying to make fun of him, he apparently loved to go to see bare knuckle boxing, which was illegal. But this guy loved to go.
Things were illegal back then?
Jeez. Oh, yeah. because it was like, you know, it was like cockfights, right? But with men. And so he went to one illegally. A guy gets knocked out and dies. He runs away so he doesn't get implicated. You don't want the future king of England being implicated in this. So that is when the boys come out to play, Georgie Porgy
runs away.
Anyway, that's definitely a criticism of this guy, but trying to make it in some sort of rhyming fun scheme.
Gotcha. And it worked because we repeat this to our kids. All right. I will give you one more last quick one, since this episode has basically become about the British monarchy throughout history.
Yes.
So you're familiar with three blind mice, see how they run. And on it goes. They ran after the farmer's wife, who cut off their tails with a carving knife. Did you ever see such a sight in your life as three blind mice? So again, this is about three blind mice who have their tails cut off by the farmer's wife with a butcher's knife.
Yeah.
So a carving knife, rather. This was actually not created so that Americans can play this song at sporting events when the referees make a mistake. In any event, so the three blind mice are not literally three blind mice, but like many of these stories, go back to the British monarchy. This one goes back to the early 1600s, and that was the time of Queen Mary I. And the blind mice were actually Protestant loyalists who were accused of plotting against her, and they were burned at the stake. So there you have it, kids. Another great story for you to learn the lessons of the world.
Well, by the way, the same queen, Queen Mary, who was Henry VIII's first child with Catherine of Aragon, and she was, you know, Bloody Mary because she was Catholic and killed everyone, also was the subject of another poem, Mary, Mary, Quite Contrary.
Oh, she was the same one?
Yes. And she killed hundreds of Protestants because she hated them. And part of the poem goes about silver bells and cockle shells. Guess what those were? Torture implements. They were torture implements.
Can we actually believe anything we read, take it at face value, or do we have to figure out, okay, what did the British monarchy do this time?
I think it's part of the wry humor that all the Brits have to this day that we don't possess here, because we are much more unsubtle, right at you, knock you in the head versus them. They have to always creep around and say things in layers and in tongues.
I guess. I think we probably have spent most of the last half hour destroying most people's beautiful memories. Yeah. So we've covered, you know, babies falling out of trees and dying, and parents dying before, you know, after childbirth, creating orphans, and people burning at the stake, and otherwise civilized, nice members of society looking ugly naked women. So that's what this is all about, Kurt. And you and I are delighted that we could uncover some of these stories and share them with our listeners.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's a wrap for today. Kurt and I will be back next week with another episode of Smart Drivel. Until then, goodbye, everybody.
And I just want to give credit to John's mother, who had the idea for this episode.
Oh, I forgot to do that. Thank you for doing that.
Yes. Great.
That's going to be tough to fix in post-production.
Ciao, everyone.
Right. Thanks, Mom. Bye.